listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Starting over here, on my right, we've got the one and only Martin Page.
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Back for the show.
Nice to see you, Mike.
Number two. Two this year.
Only two.
Only two, yeah.
This is probably going to be the last one for a very long time. I've got a lot to say.
Welcome, Martin.
Thank you, mate.
And sitting next to him, we've got Scott. What are you looking at?
USA Today.
Nice. We've got Scott Gershon, who you can tell is really into the podcast.
Like, what? Yeah. Thank you. That was a great show. Thank you very much.
Scott, it's good to see you.
Hi.
Next to him, we've got Brandon Birdseye. Brandon.
What's up, Mike?
Doing good. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing well.
And next to him, we've got the one, the only, Hezekiah McMurray. Hez.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
And finally, over here on my left, we've got the one.
Finally. That means you're out of it.
Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, because we haven't come up with a better nickname. Mm-hmm. Rob Arbiteer.
Hello there, Mike. Hello, everybody else. Hello.
Rob, it's good to see you.
Good to be seen. Good to see you.
And today, joining us, we have a good friend of mine, Diane Johnson. Diane Johnson is sitting in with us. Hi, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
And Diane has a great story, and we'll talk to her a little bit later on, but feel free to pipe in and talk anytime you want.
Okay.
Especially when some of these guys are talking. Hey, we got a lot to cover today. First of all, wow, that last show was like our longest show ever.
It was like 7 hours long.
It was 7 hours, 14 minutes, wow. 37 seconds.
Nice.
Exactly.
No, so from here on, all the shows would be 10 minutes
that's
long.
Right. It was an hour and 46 minutes. An hour and 46.
Yikes.
All right, so just one thing, guys. Shut up.
It was mostly you, Mike. It was mostly you, though.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Audio Nowcast. And we'll... No, it was actually pretty good, though. And it's good to see you, Pagey Boy.
It's nice to be back for two in a row. I feel like this is some kind of consistency here.
Yes,
and
it is.
I'm really putting an effort in.
Absolutely.
But it's nice to be with such fine folk on an evening. So thank you for having me back again, Mike.
You know, anytime.
Well, just this be the last time. this is it. You told me this is it.
Two in a row. At least it's in a row.
I mean, two in a row.
You know, speaking of, this is a little off the topic, but I joined your fan club on Facebook.
You did?
Yeah. There's two of them. There's the fan page, and then there's the fan group, and I joined the fan
did
group.
Did you send me any money to join?
Yeah, what was up with that? It was like $1,500 to start and $37 a month or
you
something
must have
like
some
that.
Time on your hands to join my fan club.
It was kind of fun. It was like, oh, I want to see what all these groups are about. And so it was posted on your fan page, and so I joined the group. And you know what? There are some really passionate people out there because, believe me, to join a fan group for Martin, you'd have to be very, very passionate. Yes.
Well, you did put a video up recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Tour, so
you know,
that
they're
was great.
Good people. I mean, they're you know, it's there's people out there behind all those names and things like that. So it was pretty cool, and so I dropped the one of the videos.
Thank you, Mike, for joining my fan club. I know I do. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but what I do want to tell you is for a small down payment, I won't talk about a lot of stuff.
Whatever it costs.
No, but there's some really good people on your fan page, and I put the tour video up. But it's actually, you know, there's a lot of good, passionate people out there, and I just wanted to give them a shout out.
They're a great bunch. I'm very, very lucky, actually, because they've been very supportive over the three albums, and they've been there right from the beginning. So I'm very, very lucky to have such a support.
Well, and we've talked about it before. There is no substitute for that.
Yeah.
And that has to be – you have to get those people one at a time. I mean, it's – when you find people who are loyal like that, you got to not let them go.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really great. And the girl that started the group – and you know, there's only three people in the group, but still, it was
but they're passionate. Right. Well, I think it's two people with a cat. The third one is an animal.
As long as they're not out behind the bushes outside your
but
house,
they're passionate.
Okay.
Yeah, they're passionate.
Let me tell you, social media, it's like everybody's still trying to kind of figure out how to use it. This past week, there was a riot in Hollywood. Brandon, were you there with that riot?
I was on the roof recording it.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's a great story. There's a riot in Hollywood. What ended up happening is they had this film for the Electric Daisy Festival that was premiering across the street at the Chinese Theater. They were supposed to have Cascade, who's a DJ. He was supposed to pull up on a flatbed truck with speakers on the truck, and he was going to play two songs and leave. He gets on his Twitter account. He tweets, "Hey, come join us at Hollywood for a street party!" Right? He has 90,000 followers. Wow. 90,000 people. It seemed like converged on Hollywood, and it just got so crowded that it packed the courtyard of the Chinese Theater. Then went to the sidewalk, and then they slowly started taking lanes away from the traffic.
Wow.
Pretty soon, the police came. They had to block off both ends of Hollywood Boulevard, and the crowd basically filled in. It was a giant, you know, party, but there was so many people there that Cascade actually couldn't get through. So he's driving up Highland.
The police had shut down Highland to La Brea by the time he got there.
Yeah.
So he couldn't even show up.
So he's driving down around all the streets but Hollywood Boulevard playing his music, and then... And then the crowd gets a little unruly, and the cops come in, and they go into riot gear, and they start clearing out. They take like 10 feet at a time, and as they're taking 10 feet at a time, and you know, I'm up, you know, on the sixth floor looking down, watching all this thing.
Wow.
It was like an ant farm gone crazy. But
what was the actual concert?
It wasn't a concert, it was a film.
It was a documentary movie about the Electric
Daisy
Festival.
Yeah.
It's an electronic music.
Daisy Carnival. And the funny thing is I remember going into asking Brandon, you know, "Hey, did you see that?" And Brandon goes, "Yeah, I was on the roof," and he has his little kit there and he's recording the helicopters.
Sound Devices 702 up there recording. I got some great helicopters, I have to tell you.
Yeah, and I was like, "You gotta be careful because that thing kind of looks like a gun." You know? So there's a riot going down there, and Brandon's up there
on the roof. I had a windsock on it.
He's pointing a gun at the helicopters. But yeah, I mean, it's the power of social media.
Yeah.
It's like, I think Cascade, you know,
So it was just a tweet that he did.
Just one tweet.
Wow.
And then
you
see him, if you go to his Twitter page, you see that it's like, "The man's trying to shut us down." And then his next one is, "Everybody, calm the bleep down." And he's like, a total change of tune and stuff. It's just...
You wouldn't have had that problem if I'd got my fan club. It just wouldn't have been quite the same.
But it's interesting. I mean, it's just you got. I mean, I know Diane. You've had some issues with your Facebook, right?
Just recently, we did a concert and we have this girl that shows up. So yeah, I have a stalker.
Wow.
In Boise,
you're
and he
right.
didn't mention I'm from Boise.
Yeah.
So
Diane, Johnson from Boise.
It's a smaller community.
You know, social media, it's a great tool, but, you know, you got to be on guard. And it's just interesting to see how it's all kind of evolving and, you know, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And this last week, there was a lot of bad. Anyhow, getting back to what we're going to talk about. One thing we want to talk about right now is the cloud. You guys know what the cloud is? You hear all this talk about the cloud? Rob, can you give us a definition of the cloud when people say... It's going to be on the cloud.
It's a bunch of computers, isn't it?
It sounded like Bobby.
Yeah,
we don't have him here, but you did
it's
Bobby very well.
Hard drives in heaven?
Yeah, basically, it's a whole bunch of computers networked together to act like one big pool of stuff. People like the idea of it because it's a way of sort of offloading things from your own local computer, having your stuff sitting on some huge network of computers out there in the ether. That you can get to from anywhere.
Right.
So basically we went from a mainframe, which was kind of like a cloud, to a personal computer that you had in your house, back to a giant mainframe that you control a terminal.
Well, except the difference is you don't generally do your processing on the cloud. You usually do your data storage on the cloud, although there are cloud-based applications.
But wait, isn't Facebook almost a version of the cloud?
Because
you actually run in a program not on your computer but on somebody else's.
Yeah, well, I guess you could say any centrally hosted website is sort of sort of running in a cloud. Actually, there are cloud-based servers and there are single computer-based servers, and a big organization like Facebook or Google or any of them are using a giant network of computers that could be called a cloud. And actually, some of the commercials that I did for Google were for their apps that run in the cloud, that Arctic Adventure one.
Right.
And that stuff. So the cloud is the big buzzword now that everybody's into, but it just basically means a big collection of computers and hard drives that aren't in your house.
Now, what
and makes, security issues are a big deal.
Yeah, well, what makes the cloud so big now and so hip is, you know, you've always had the ability to upload files and to download files from remote computers and from servers, but nowadays they have applications and they have programs which allow you to do this stuff in the background and allow you to do this pretty seamless, where you can actually have a little folder, for instance, like Dropbox, mm-hmm. where you have a folder on your computer, and anything that you put into that folder will automatically in the background upload to a remote server, to the cloud. And that's why they call it the cloud, because it's just kind of out there. And then you can access these files on not only on your computer, but if you have a cell phone, you can access them on a cell phone. You can access them on an iPad. There's a lot of different ways to access the files, and they're all in sync.
And actually, synchronization is what it usually comes down to, where what most people think of as cloud storage these days is a synchronization between what's on your own computer and what's out there on a big server someplace. Right. And it's a way to, like, let's say you have an application on one device, but you own other devices. If you have it synchronized with the cloud, if all of your devices are synchronized with the cloud, it means if you put the application on one machine, it's available on all of them. Or if you have a song, you know, that you buy for one device, you can play it on any of your devices. But synchronization is the main concept. It's not the concept that you offload things. It's that you just have your data in multiple places.
So your desktop, your laptop, your iPad, and your iPod all sync together.
Could all have the same files. And what's there's some great things about it, and the fact that you can you can back up your home computer, Martin. you can back them up pretty effortlessly up into remote servers, and so you can, using services like Carbonite, using services like Dropbox, you can all collaborate on a project together. As a matter of fact, we started doing some work with EA, and it's all Dropbox based, where basically you're uploading and saving your files to Dropbox, and those files are getting uploaded to everybody on the team who has that access to that Dropbox, and you can see changes not real time, but really quick.
Is the person you're working with initial CD?
Yes.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing.
Are you?
Oh yeah.
What a.
Anyway,
a small world.
Yes.
One other thing about this synchronization that you have to keep in mind with your internet connection at home, if you're going to use one of these services, is that your upload speed matters a lot. And most people for their internet have much faster download speed than upload speed. Yep. And if you're going to be doing any kind of serious storage on a cloud, keep in mind that your upload speed could be a tenth of what your download speed is, or even less.
Yeah.
And that's going to become a problem if you're trying to store a bunch of videos and a bunch of photos. Because even things like Dropbox, they have to still synchronize. You put things on the Dropbox on your computer, and then software in the background will synchronize it up to the cloud eventually.
Right.
But if you're going to do that a lot, you should look into faster upload speeds for your internet.
Yeah, and the reason why I bring it up, and the pain wasn't working with this person. The pain was setting up the whole system, because everybody kind of has to have the same plugins, and everybody has to be on the, basically on the same side of things. And exactly what you're saying is there's an initial start time where everybody has to sync the files, and
that takes a long time sometimes.
It was like 27 days when we first started it, because it was like, you know, 60 gigs for, you know, to seed it. It took a lot of time.
And keep in mind that just because you have the service running, until it actually does the full synchronization, you're not protected.
Right.
And that can take a long time.
But
now you have to pay for this, right? I mean, it's
there's a free version of Dropbox that you can get for 2 gigs, and if you bring people on, they'll give you 250 megabyte increments. It's not bad. It's pretty good. If you wanted to collaborate with somebody who's not around, it's not too bad of a way to work, if you know the limitations and you know.
And everybody's on the same page,
right?
Yeah. One thing I did today was I created something in my house that needed a CD burnt, so I put it on Dropbox, had my guys over in Hollywood, go in, burn a couple CDs, got in, picked them up. All of a sudden, it's a way of being able to, instead of using FTP or anything like that. And then if you want, what I recommend then is if there's anything sensitive, you put it up there, take it down. I've had people, same thing with scripts. You put scripts up there, put it to your iPad, you get the scripts off.
Because it's not safe at a certain point?
You know, it's one of those things that it seems to be pretty safe, but digital delivery was safe until it got hacked. So it's one of those things that when in doubt, just take the precautions.
And keep in mind, you can always put encrypted files up, and then they are safe, no matter what their protection is. Like, if you use a military-grade encryption on your files, which is very easy these days, then it doesn't matter if they get hacked. Someone may be able to get your file, but they can't look at it.
Right. And you also realize, too, that you know if you're working in a group environment where you're all working on these files at the same time, you know, you're opening up your computer to not only to other people, but anybody else that they open up their computer to.
Sure.
So let's say they leave
their... So you're opening a door.
Yeah. Let's say they leave their computer on and they walk away and, you know, somebody else gets to it. Well, starts poking around. It's just, like Scott was saying, it's a door. So as good as it is to work with people, you have to realize that you're kind of, you know, you're releasing
Is this the future?
Yeah.
I think so. Having it available as one type of interconnectivity is the future. Because it's inexpensive for people. It's a good way to, it's, you know, when you back stuff up, you should have more than one backup. You should have a few. It's a very valid way to back things up as one of those modes, even though you're still going to have maybe a local backup and a backup, you know, a different kind of media. Maybe you back up to DVDs and to extra hard drives or whatever. But putting things on a cloud-based server is good because it gets it geographically out of your location.
Well, did you say cloud? And I mean, is it made by Mac or Apple?
No, it's just a group of, it's a cluster of servers sitting someplace.
Cloud is a nickname for a concept that, you know, you've got your local hard drives. Well, if you have hard drives that you're saving it somewhere out there, that's kind of a cloud. Microsoft's got one, Apple's got one, Google's got one.
It's just like a term.
It's just a term for a whole bunch of hard drives and computers out there.
But you're gonna see it more and more people, and it's not a bad thing.
But aren't you though? I mean, when you upload speeds, we were talking about that. All of a sudden, if you've got networks, fast networks, and you've got drives that are ultra fast, and you're putting in your 9 gigs,
right?
Oh, it's never going to be as fast as that.
But
a lot of people,
uploading takes a long time.
But the cloud isn't just for storage. The idea about what's becoming popular with the cloud now is the idea that it synchronizes all your devices,
right?
And that's what Apple is counting on. That's what a few people are counting on. That it makes it very convenient if somebody has an iPad and they also then get an iPhone, that their stuff can be synchronized. Yeah. And that's not just a storage issue. That's actually some tricky software that keeps things...
Because I think the big thing was, and we're starting to get in our family, my son's getting a little bit older, and you know, we wind up thinking about getting him an iPod or something. Now all of a sudden, we have all these songs, all these different devices, and okay, I got to load yours, and I got to load yours, and now theoretically, if there's a cloud, and if they can break apart where it's not just Apple... But now you can go on your iPad and your Google phone, and you can actually just listen to the music.
There are always still going to be issues, though, of digital rights management and how many copies do you have the right to make of a song. And last time we were talking about, I'm drawing a blank, what was the service?
Spotify,
right. Where your music basically all exists on a cloud, and then if you pay some money, you can download it to your hard drive. But if you don't, if you're using the free version, your music all exists up on somebody else's computers. The tendency has changed. Our generation, the old people, tend to like to have a copy on our own device. The next generation doesn't really care about that. They just want to be able to get to their music, and that's why Spotify Free has a chance, because they don't care that they don't have a copy on their device as long as they can hear it whenever they want.
One thing that like a good practical use for the cloud is iTunes, the next version of iTunes, where you'll be able to synchronize all the music that not only that you've bought, but all the music that you've entered into your iTunes library. You can pay them some money and upload it to their servers and have the ability for them to have it. To hold it, it'll be on their servers, and then you can download it and stream it to your iPhone, and you can stream it to your iPad, and you don't have to have, let's say you have 120 gigs worth of songs, you don't have to have all 120 gigs on you. You can have access to them, and it streams. It's like your own personal little internet radio.
You're just paying them for the convenience of them handling the synchronization.
And all documents that you create, you don't even throw lift it save. There's an autosave. You just go and you do a document, go to your other computer, come home, continue on that document, and you know, and not only that, but it opens up the concept, because when we do, you know, the business side of what we do, budgets,
right,
a lot of times I have people in different rooms and in different cities, so if we want to now open up and all work on a document at the same time, the document lives on the cloud and we're all updating it at once.
Now, we've talked about what the cloud is, and we've used, given examples of how to use the clouds, but there's a couple things wrong with the cloud that you just, I just want to warn people about.
Storms.
Number one is, you know, as computer manufacturers and Apple, everybody's talking about the cloud and downloading and all this stuff and streaming TV. You've got the internet, the ISPs, the internet service providers, like Time Warner, Comcast. They're starting to put data caps on people's accounts. And they're starting to say, great, this is all good and dandy, but you can only upload and download, only have 250 gigs of data going back and forth. Now, people might not think 250 gigs, they might think that that's a lot of storage, but on the internet, if you read some of the blogs out there, there was an example where this guy who takes a lot of pictures and he was syncing it up with his Carbonite account went over the 250 gigabyte limit like halfway through the month, and he got banned basically for a year. They slowed his speed down because it was the second time that he had gone over his data cap. And so I think people need to realize that, you know, everybody, we're making these clouds, we're making all these services, but the gatekeepers, the internet service providers, they're making the tunnel, they're shrinking it. It's getting, they're slowly shrinking.
But you know, like if you look at the power and water and the utilities that you've got, the internet will become a utility. And what's going to happen is you actually get to pay for what you use. And now that they say, no, stream TV, stream your music, stream it up, stream it down, then eventually they're going to put a meter on it.
Yep.
Right on it, and next thing you know, because why should I pay as much as the guy next to me who's downloading a lot? They put a meter on it, and you pay for X amount, and next thing, you can't live without it.
Yeah.
Because that is part of life, like electricity and water. It's your information on everything.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think people need to just pay attention. You need to pay attention to your data, your limits, what your ISP is allowing you to do, and just be prepared that we're going to go to a time where, like Scott, I totally agree with what Scott's saying, where you're going to be metered and you're going to pay for all your upload and all your download, like the electricity. Like
well, you know what? People got used to that with cell phones. I mean, you know the idea that you have a certain number of minutes and a certain number of texts or whatever, and then you go beyond that and you pay. And if you want more, you can buy a better plan for more money. It's the same thing with internet.
My big thing is I just want it to be fair and decent. I don't mind paying for it, but I just think it needs to be priced.
It's never fair and easy.
Well, you know what? Paying for water, it's
how much
money
do you have?
It's not that bad. It's seriously, I mean, you're paying for electricity, and I don't know.
But do you realize that if you look at the economic values of it, Apple? Well, first they said Apple's got more money than actually the U.S. government.
I know
right
that's
now.
Pretty hilarious.
Number two, it just means that in this economy where everyone, 10% of the people are unemployed, and oh my God, we're crashing. Apple, on the other hand, is all-time sales. So all of a sudden, people go, everything's bad, but boy, do I want my Apple.
Yeah.
And everyone's buying it and finding the money. So the question becomes, like many things in life, from healthcare and everything else, what's it worth to you? And they're realizing it's worth a lot. Because people that don't have a lot of money are still spending money on iPads and Macs, iPods, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting to see how it all kind of shakes out, because we're becoming more and more dependent, not only for just entertainment value, but for our livelihoods, you know? And I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
It'll be as important as the telephone.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. But on the other hand, too, you know, as much as you start working in the cloud and as much as you start uploading your stuff, I still think, you know what, you got to have that copy. You got to have that hard copy, because if you've ever had your ISP go down, your internet go down, that you just feel so disconnected.
But what if you're traveling someplace exactly. and you don't have service?
I mean, that's getting rarer and rarer, but it's still like when you're disconnected from the internet, you feel really disconnected. I mean, that's one of the great things.
Power outages. Yeah. Power outages. No electricity. My wife, my son, and I were on the connection. They're going, we have no clue what to do.
You know what, though?
No TV, no internet. Isn't that? No video games.
People are forced to talk to each other.
God forbid.
As human beings.
We like to talk through the cloud.
But you know what's kind of scary about the whole cloud
thing? I thought
when
the cloud came out, I thought, oh, we're going back to the 60s. This is a nice dope period of writing. I can understand that.
But yeah, exactly.
That's called local cloud.
It's... What's kind of scary about the cloud is everything's becoming more and more virtual. We're losing, you know, the printed page. We're losing the record. We're losing recordings. It's like, mm-hmm. man, but you know, one good electromagnetic jolts and, you know, we're back. Yeah.
But you know, in the days of Plato and Aristotle, that there was a discussion and there's an article written at that time. About
the cloud?
No, about the ring page. Because so many stories were told by mouth, stories mm-hmm. told from people to people, and they said the moment you write it down, there's no way to capture the emotion and the full story of that right. story, and how the written page was going to degrade that informational process. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Now we're saying, oh my God, the printed page! It's going away, but the next generation doesn't care.
Yeah, but at least the printed page, you have something that hundreds of years from now you can
now
go to
the
printed
page. Now
you
save some trees. You'll get some oxygen back.
I'm just saying, you know, in 200 years, you know, what are they? Where are they?
I think your point about this, there's got to be.
But you know what's interesting though is with that though, I don't disagree because I love the smell of a good book, but. You have to go to a library. You have to pick yourself up.
He doesn't
go to
read
a library.
Them. He just smells them.
Hope the library actually has the book. Because your local library doesn't. It's only the big library.
Right.
So the reality is, unless you got the world book, what do we, the encyclopedias?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The information wasn't available.
Right.
You know, you have to go to school. Adults never dealt with it. Now, I find myself having a question. You zip over to your iPad or your computer. You ask the question,
and
information is readily available.
You know what?
More than any printed page.
My book-sniffing friend has a point.
No. I totally... Listen, I'm not saying...
You can always sniff a good book out.
That goes with the room cloud.
I am not anti, you know,
I think your point about having when it's a really serious, important thing that you can't ever do without, you should have different, you know... materials on that thing. It's important, not just like you just said, if a terrorist attack was just to take out the internet for a while, we'd all be running into walls, you know?
I'm just saying, and we've had this discussion before, but you know, when you start realizing more and more of the stuff is becoming virtual, where's the box of the shoebox full of pictures from your grandparents? I mean, that's just not going to exist.
On the E drive, under the folder.
Exactly. It's just not going to exist.
You know what I find a bigger issue, though, is because actually I love having the photos, and I don't even care about printed photos anymore. I like them on the computer. They're nice and pretty.
I do, too.
But here's the problem I find. Let's say you want to say, how do I build a shoebox? Something really simple. You go on the internet and you get about 12,000 things, and the first one come up is Amazon, because there is no box, but they'll put you there anyway because they take every word in the language and place you into something. So the first 10 pages are pretty much crap. So the hard part, I think, is now that you've got access to every bit of information in theory that you could ever want, how do you find the right information exactly with what you want?
Right.
Whether it's a review, you know, I don't want to see Nextag, and I don't want to see Amazon, and I don't want to see everybody trying to sell me something. I just want an answer to a question.
Yeah. It's getting more and more difficult. And I think archiving our generation, the next generation, and the generation after that is going to be the hardest thing. Mm. Because how are you going to – and we talk about this all the time, but every time I talk about the cloud, I can't help but coming back to the point is – how is my stuff going to survive again and again and again? It's like I've already copied it a couple times over. and then that hard drive goes, and then you upload it to the cloud. But then what happens when that service goes out?
Next generation of neural links, just pop it in the brain and you have images of it. You can live it again and again.
It's going to be interesting to see where this all kind of ends up.
Well, and you know what? Whatever your really important information is, every time a new technology comes out, just bump it up to the next thing.
Yeah, the next storage unit. Mm-hmm.
What about you, Diane? Do you back up your stuff?
I think you guys are freaking me out a little.
At least we're not stalking you, though.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
Do you back up any of your stuff? What about your pictures and stuff? Do you print them out?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I have nothing. I like stuff. I want my stuff. So, yeah, I want my pictures. But, I saw a place today on Hollywood Boulevard, half-hour photo. I'm like, who even does that anymore?
Half hour?
And what does
I
that even
wait
mean?
A half hour?
I know. Yeah. But anyhow.
You know what? It is a problem, though. I think that actually going into the podcast that we do, is that instant gratification is an issue. Because I know as a sound designer, I started with music and then into sound effects. If you can't get instant gratification, like I want the best sounding guitar, piano, anything. And I want it. Why can't I get it now? And I want it. You know. And I think the idea of being able to experiment and create and going sometimes a day or two with, I'm coming up with nothing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden something comes about in the creative process. I'm more concerned with the ability to communicate in this world where it's instant anything and everything right away. The brain doesn't do that. The brain's not an instant process. And I think that certain things take time to craft. Like, I've got my 7-year-old son, and he's very impatient for everything. And I've been trying to explain to him that when you study and you get good at something and you really work at it, you'll get good. But he's like, he'll do something. Is that enough?
The thing is there's a real danger, I think. I think it's that you can get a lack of reverence for something. Like if you do pick up the photograph and you see your grandmother and it's still on the same paper or the letter you've got written in her own handwriting,
right.
You feel something. And that's the thing why what's actually becoming quite hip now is to look back at bands that actually play together. And we look at albums where, you know, Fleetwood Mac would have done Rumours and there's a story behind it because it's instant gratification. And this high speed movement is all, you know, nothing's going to stop it. But there's a real danger of reverence, of going, that's special, that's not. This had to be worked for, that didn't. This has got human contact in it, that hasn't. And that's the definitions that's become very smudgy at this point right. About what do you really care for and what don't you care for and how cheap do you want to be or how rich do you want to be and how deep do you be. And then there's a humanity in the middle of all that.
And also I think how long do you care for? Because some people go, I want it, I got it. Ooh, okay, now what's next?
Yes, that's right, Big time.
I just want to encourage everybody as, you know, as you start, you know, we talked a little bit about the cloud. Just be aware of what's really important. Don't be afraid to print out a picture every now and then. Don't be afraid to take some of your more precious songs and burn a CD and just keep some hard copies around because as much as the cloud's going to be great and it's going to be awesome, you know, leave something for your kids.
But, you know, something which you were doing with, I know, the client you were talking about, it's a very interesting concept because now if you're doing collaboration with another songwriter,
right?
As, let's say, with Pro Tools, you're updating your Pro Tools, you put down a track. The moment you put the track down, it saves it up to the cloud, and the person on the other side can listen to it within seconds to minutes after it's been recorded, so there could be more of a collaboration happening.
Right.
So between that and Skype, you can say, yeah, I don't know, just try another take of that. And you try another take, you put it up there like, okay. And all of a sudden, while it's not real time, it's almost.
Yeah, no, it's pretty exciting.
But you know what else? The cloud concept is a marketing concept. Because you could do the same thing if you had fast enough connections. If Martin had a high-speed connection and I did too, and we wanted to collaborate on a song, I could do a track and put it on his computer and he could do it vice versa. The
it's
idea of the cloud is it's just easier. A gigantic network of stuff out there that you can access. But, you know, cloud right now is a very hip term.
Right.
And it'll come and go, but there's always going to be giant networks of computers out there that you can use for storage.
And you know what? On that note, we're gonna take a break. And we're gonna wrap up talking about the cloud.
The cloud. Has anyone here? Oh, iCloud hasn't started yet, right? No, right?
No, but today the pricing for some of the stuff came out.
And but it's a typical Apple thing. Nothing really successful until Apple does it.
Yeah, and it's not cheap. I was surprised for the amount of money that you.
Neither is an iPad. It's $800, but. MP3 players were out for a long time.
But
dum-dum-dum.
Anyway, well, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to visit a little bit with Diane. And then we're going to talk a little bit about songwriting. And so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about the cloud.
Cloud.
All right, enough talk about the cloud. Today joining us, we have Diane Johnson. And I brought Diane on the podcast because, number one, she's a friend of mine, and we've known each other for a long time.
A long time.
She's all, you've always played guitar as long as I've known you.
Yeah, I played guitar
high school.
Pretty much since grade school.
And Diane currently has her own band and is also working with a new country artist named Danae Gardner. And she's just now breaking and has a single out that's doing pretty decent and is going to release another one. And Diane started her first promo tour.
Right.
And I remember getting all the phone calls. Oh, do you want me to go on tour? I go, yes, yeah, I told you they were going to go on tour. She got to go to Nashville and do some recording and all the really cool stuff. But what was really cool is Diane has been doing this and also kind of has a real life, has a job.
Right.
And it's been really cool and exciting to see how this is kind of – how it's worked out a little later in life and how you just never know, you know, if you – you just never know when these opportunities will pop up.
Right.
I mean, could you imagine that you're doing promo tours and gigs?
No.
You know?
No, even a year ago.
Why don't you tell a little bit about the story with Danae and some of the stuff that you've done? And
well, I've been working with a band called Beloved for about 3 years. We play in the Treasure Valley up in Idaho. And I thought the band was going to break up. So I started looking around for other opportunities. And ran across a songwriter who just had moved back from Nashville, and he was looking for someone to sing his demos for him, and so I came along, and he liked me, and we started doing some songs, and he was writing songs for Danae, so one thing led to another, and next thing I knew, I was in Nashville, calling Mike, saying, what's going on? Please tell me what's happening.
Help me!
it was really kind of cool because she was, you know, she started posting pictures and stuff. And, you know, usually when people say, I'm going to Nashville, you know, you never know what kind of studio it's going to be. And it could be some guy's garage. And she ended up working with Jay-Z. And I don't know if you guys know who Jay-Z is, but he's a producer extraordinaire who's, you know, worked with Prince and done all kinds of great stuff. And
yeah,
I'm like, holy smokes.
It was a true case where ignorance was bliss. I knew he was something, but it was good.
And they also recorded on an API board, too.
Well, ooh, of course.
Yay.
I thought it was really interesting, and now she's gigging, and you did... How many weeks were you gone on the first promo tour that you did?
We did 1 week up in the Pacific Northwest and then 2 weeks out in the Midwest. So.
And all along having to have, you know, your normal life and around your normal job and trying to schedule it in and out of the stuff. And
yeah,
it's kind of exciting, you know, and it just goes to show you that if you, you know, you spend some time and if you just, you never know where these opportunities will pop up.
Right,
and,
right.
And now is she going to be touring again? Is she going out again? Is she?
I expect she's getting ready to release her second song, so that David did, or Jay-Z, so. I know him as David Z, so.
I said Jay-Z.
Yeah. That's a rapper, Mike. I was thinking, what's he doing?
I was going to go, wow.
Who is that?
Nashville, Jay-Z.
Awesome. I just realized.
But he was awesome.
I was going, wow, that's a okay. Nashville.
Yeah.
I had a lot more respect
Nashville
for him than
Jersey.
Wow.
It's his other brother. It's Jay's brother, David.
Mark II.
Darn it. Any way you can edit around that? Or do I need
to... It's Let's leave fun. It
in. You have to drop David in.
No, we got to leave that in.
You got it.
And then David has to be cut in everywhere. David Z. David Z.
Such an idiot.
Yeah, it's
David. See David. David Z.
And you get another voice just to go in on it.
Do a lot of does.
Hold on one second.
Just call Mr. Z.
Hold on. And now she's working with David Z.
Right.
We're gonna do edit. This is stuff.
No, you know
never
what, Jeremy? This is a good test for you as a dialogue editor. Here, I'm gonna give you this. David. Okay, now fix it. Bring the octave.
Promotion. Emotion. Give me good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
David Z.
Yeah.
David Z. She's working with David Z. And now she's working with David Z.
David Z.
David Z.
David Z.
David
Z.
David Z. Who's
Jersey?
Wait, I got to do a David Z, and you guys got to respond like,
okay. Mm.
David Z.
That sounded normal to me.
That was good.
That was, yeah. We did all that in harmony.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
We made nothing right, but we're funny. So
you know, the Osmonds.
You know, my favorite part is that Diane is so nice that she just sort of put in there, well, you know, I know him as David. Too, you can call him whatever
she
the hell you want.
Way worse.
She was being so nice.
She could have schooled
it.
You big time, Mike. Okay. It would have been awesome.
I think this is showing the cloud is too much in the room.
That was so awesome.
God. You should keep that for an outtake, yeah. Though.
That's awesome. Great. That's,
somehow I think this is going to make the show.
We should do outtakes of show 110. You know?
There is no outtakes. It's called The Take. Anyhow. So anyhow.
We're with you. We're with you.
Okay. So with David Z in Nashville working
yes.
on an album.
Yes. That was it. That was it exactly.
I gotta compose myself.
Pull yourself together, mate.
Did you have a mic that you liked?
Pardon?
We'll just leave it
this
in there.
This is the mic I always knew. I just gotta tell you.
But
it's hard to put him on a boom pole.
Getting back to what we were talking about, which I have no idea now, but.
You were getting to that point where you were saying you were jockeying to, a normal life with a tour, which I think was interesting.
Right.
Thanks, Martin.
Yeah.
So and they were opening for P. Diddy, and by P. Diddy, he means Barry Manilow.
I had him back in there.
Sorry, threw him out.
Yeah, well, that's...
That's
it goes sometimes.
Diddy, but that's okay.
Sorry.
All right, so we'll get back. So anyhow, balancing your real life with now all these new opportunities, what did you find was the most difficult aspect of that whole thing?
Oh, well, you know, it was a big transition from being just at home and going on the road. So trying to organize everyone and make sure everyone was ready to go. So, but...
Do you have a normal 9-to-5 type?
I have a part-time job, actually, so they were actually very flexible. And the ironic thing is the more people that I told about it, the more they were all on board.
Well, they think it's cool,
you got to
sure.
go. You know, you can't stay home. You got to go do this. Yeah. So,
Where's home?
Boise, Idaho. Sorry. That's right.
And we will not be linking to her Facebook page once again.
Apparently, it's not necessary. People are able to find it.
Apparently. Apparently. And so. My cell phone number.
But we will link to Jay-Z's.
There you go.
He's good.
Jay-Z's going, what are you going to notice? What are you
going
But no, I just think that's, you know, it's really important because you just never know when opportunities are going to come your way, especially nowadays with the way technology is and you know, if you know, she's doing this tour with basically Diane playing guitar, right? You play guitar,
right.
See backup
right.
vocals, and they went to Nashville. It was just you two that went to Nashville.
Is the record on a major label or is it an independent label?
No, she's
label?
Doing independent. Oh, okay. She's going the independent route.
You know, one of the things we've talked about before, and it's something I always harp on, is just be really, really good at what you do. Because you never know when the opportunities are going to come up, and there's nothing sadder than having an opportunity come up and you're not ready to take it. So the trick is be really great at something so that when you get a chance, you can really do it.
And speaking of opportunities, I mean, I know you were weighing just whether or not you should go in the first place and whether you know, I know that kind of weighed. You're trying to figure out, you know, how you were going to do it. And
yeah, how I was going to do it, whether I should do it. Am I too old? That was another big question. Is this ridiculous? But no, you know.
Well, going into good rap music.
Yeah, that's true.
Trash out of the hotel room.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Well, Jay-Z wanted me to be doing that, right? So.
Sorry, Mark, we're back again. Slipped.
I still deserve that. Anyway.
Anywho.
But, well, it'll be good to keep tabs on you and to see as your success, not only with Danae. It is Danae, right?
It is Danae. You're doing it right.
And but your own band and see where things lead, you know?
Yeah. Do we have links for where people can hear samples? Or
yeah, we'll link to Danae.
Yeah, she's on. She's got her own website and her Facebook page.
And you can hear
without a cell phone number.
You can.
That's easy enough to get that.
We'll call Jay-Z.
We'll put some links up there that are safe.
Yeah, there you go.
And Jay-Z free.
Yeah.
I'm such an
we're
idiot.
Never going to get any notes. We're actually dragging you across the fucking desert.
You can't link this to anything now.
Yeah. Actually, this is one of the funnest shows we've done in a long time. Yeah.
I hope you keep some of it in.
Well, we will. We'll keep it all in. Yeah. Hey, now we're gonna change course just a little bit, get away from rap and country music. And I had a person send me an email and wanted to talk about songwriting and ask the question. We talk a bit about self-editing. We talk a little bit about, you know, editing yourself. And as a songwriter, how do you know when the song you're working on sucks? How do you know when to give up? What does that moment look like? How do you determine that? Martin, as a songwriter,
it's a tough question, really. Because
have you ever been down that route?
Oh yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Is really, you know, you're never at a consistent place with your songs, and I'm always analyzing them. But in the early years, I think when you first start off, you're just, I said it before on the show, you're just happy to finish a song, and you're not really aware of how to edit the song, and you're just happy that you got the result. But I think one of the most beneficial things is to find, as well as experience of doing it consistently, is to find somebody who you trust, that you know has the ears to like your music or to judge your music, and you'll listen to. Also, for me, when I first started, we were, Brian and myself in our first band, we were playing all our songs to publishers, and you get a lot of refusals quite quickly, and you realize if you're absolutely dedicated to it, the more you're refused and turned down, the more you sort of take it on board, and you realize that something's going on, you look at the songs again. But nothing will ever stop you from writing the next song, so you just keep on going. But I think over a period of time, most writers that have been successful over a career will say that they judge their songs more over time now. In the early years, to make this simple, is I'd finish a song in a day and go, it's done, it must be good, let's do the harmony straight away. And you'd finish the song too quick, and you'd realize that the chords weren't right before you started doing the background vocals, you know, or you were doing another overdub. So over the years, you learn to temper that energy, and now I tend to live with the song over time. My best collaborator is time. If you get a chance, you can step back in the morning and listen to it again, and if it moves you while you're having a shave or doing something in the house and it still resonates you as melodic, then you tend to believe yourself. I think it's experience and listening to what people say to you. And not being, you know, if they keep on saying that's crap, they might mean something that's really there. but at the same time have this great strength to keep going, keep going, keep going, and keep going, and find somebody that you trust, or a few people that you like playing your music to, that you trust. You can't do it on your own. Right. You need somebody to give you feedback.
Scott, have you ever been down this road on like a sound effect? You're working on a monster or a phaser or something, and you just got to a point where you just, you know what, this is just not working. And what was the trigger point? That did you just not hear it, or you just didn't feel it, or
I'd say in every movie that's difficult that I've created, usually within the process, whether it's Star Trek or Godzilla or something of that ilk, I'd say it happens a lot, where you sit there and you go, because you think too much, you put it together, you lose focus, you lose objectivity, you're not sure what you've got, you liked it, you go to lunch, come back, you think it's crap, then you start panicking because you've got deadlines that you've got to hit and it's not really working. And then a lot of times what I've found over time is to go to sleep. And for some reason, even my wife, she goes, okay, fine, just go to sleep. Because it seems that when I go to sleep and I wake up, or within a couple of days, it comes. And I don't know why. I think that my brain just starts thinking about how to create a sound or how to create something that I'm just not happy with. And like for Godzilla, it took me 3 days of pure sheer panic.
So there's two things there that we both said. It's really, time. You step back. That brief moment of stepping back. And in the early years, you're under a deadline or you're just so proud to be doing it. But there is a really good collaborator in time. I find a lot with myself is that I think I'm on the edge of something really good and then I leave it. And then if you get pulled away, then you come back. You hear it with different ears.
But, here's the question I have, though. A lot of times when we do mixes, from a mixing perspective, the first mix you do, it's raw, it's just, you're throwing it together, it's fast, it's not correct, but it has a certain energy. Mm-hmm. Then when you spend a lot of time and you massage it, whether it's a songwriter, what I'm wondering is sometimes when you're young, you come in, you don't have a lot of knowledge, you don't have a lot of experience, and this you think is the greatest thing, you put all your energy to it and all your focus. Sometimes as you get older, you go, I did that before, and I did that before, and I did that. And all of a sudden, it still works, but you don't want to do it anymore because you're tired of it or whatever. I guess the thing is, do you feel that even though you have the knowledge and maturity of a successful writer, do you feel that you still strive for some of that naivety energy from when you were younger?
Absolutely. Every demo I do is on a cassette first, and I won't record it onto Pro Tools very rarely until I've listened to it for 2 or 3 days, a real performance of it. I won't go near the technology because one of the mistakes is you move too fast. That's the biggest thing. And there is always that great blend about going, and I've done this hundreds of times. I mean, I've recorded a track 5 times, and the best version of it was one of the first ones we've ever done. So you've got to have that real organic sense of over-experience of going back and forwards with raw energy, keeping it fresh, and looking for not in my own personal writing. I don't look for gloss or that it's professional as much as if it moves you. And I agree with you, some of the early, when I was a young writer, I would write 10 songs and 2 would be very strong and 8 were rubbish.
Right.
And as I've got older now, the best way I could explain it is that I will write less songs and 4 of those out of 5 will be good. Because of the experience, like you with your sound effects, you'll say, I don't want to go down that road. I know where it's going to lead. My biggest problem, and I think a lot of writers meet, is they move too fast. They need to get the ideas, but instantly they're getting the drum sound. Instantly they're getting the keyboard sound and doing the guitars. And then you've lost the song. You're in recording the song, mm-hmm. but you haven't studied if the song is good.
Right.
But do you ever worry about copy? In other words, I have a lot of sound designers go, oh, you can't use that sound, you can't use that plugin, because we've all done it. Yeah, but it's really effective. Do you find that you will stop yourself because you've done it, but maybe it's the right thing to do?
It does make sense. It's a mixture. I'm doing it today. I'm writing on a couple of songs, and you try to always be a little bit fresh. You try. But then you say, you know what, I've done this before, I know it's going to work to get me to the next stage, but I might erase it later and push something else in, you know, because I look at songs as production as building blocks. If the pad is a normal is a pad that helps me get somewhere, but it's not thrilling me, but it's helping me, I've got the chords right and it's moving me on, I still try to keep the flow, but still try and have that vision, like, and I feel it's a very good valid point you say, is sometimes I will write on a guitar because I don't know it as well as a keyboard. So my songs will be different. Sometimes I'll listen to folk albums for 2 weeks and then try and do a rock track, and then I'm influenced by playing a mandolin, which I can't play very well. But you have to break the mold, otherwise you get bored, and also your songs don't have magic. So,
Rob, how about you? Have you...
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what these guys have been talking about. The other thing I'll mention is there's definitely a phenomenon writing, whether it's songs or scoring music to picture or doing production or sound effects or anything, actually, is some projects or some songs seem to come very easy and almost write themselves, and there have been plenty of number one smash songs where they say, oh, we wrote that in 10 minutes and it just came together. There are also songs that take a really long time to come together. More often than not, if you're really beating your head against the wall with the song and you keep trying but you're getting frustrated and it never comes together, when you finally put it aside and just say, I'm going to just try something else, that's when you write the song that comes easy. Because your mind is so fixated on that other song that you've been banging your head into the wall about. Right. That when you decide to work on something else, it's almost like you're starting with a fresh brain.
Right.
Because the rest of your brain is all wrapped up in that other song. And so when you finally say, screw it, I'm going to try something new, that's usually when the good ideas come fast. At least it's been the experience with
your point, Mike, with me. That's really, I think that's great. But and also what you brought about knowing if you've written a good song or a bad song, it's very hard to tell straight off the bat. You have an instinct that you think you've got something that's beautiful and you keep pursuing it, but you've got to have people you play it to,
right?
And you've got to be willing to be told, I don't really get it, but keep going, you know.
Right.
You've got to be willing to fail and keep pushing forward and not stay, I think it's great and nobody else sees it, but I got it right.
And by the way, Your friends and family will never, ever be honest, by the way.
Feel like, I know when I do films, there's always a saying, films are never finished, they're abandoned.
They say the same with songs.
Yeah, so you find that, you know what, I just got to...
Yeah.
I got to put it away.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I it's really... It's all I do, it's my religion, is songs. But I can write a song today and then listen to it 3 weeks' time and totally know what to do with it, but not to know what to do with it after the first day. And I have to leave it alone and say, you know, I shouldn't knock that into the ground too hard. And I've come back and worked on songs that I wrote a year ago, and I said, I can now I get it. I just need to change the middle.
Have you ever gone down the road, then listen back to the original concept and say, wait a minute, I've lost something?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's common, yeah.
So you sit there and go, wow, I went down this rabbit hole, I'm in the wrong hole.
Yeah.
You
know, I did that yesterday.
Can I tell a perfect example about that? It's actually a song that's coming out on your new album, but there was a song that that we were trying to get the files after something happened with the hard drive. I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Can I mention the title?
Sure.
Soul Print, which is it's a fantastic song. And Martin played me an early version of it, right? And, I mean, he played me the almost finished version of it. And basically, you know, some files ended up missing and he had to go back to an earlier version. And you found that the earlier version had just more heart, more soul. And it ended up just...
I'd gone over the line, as we all do. You know, I went over and just kept going, thinking I was going to... And then I went like, oh, five roads before this, it was really strong. And now I don't need that. And I was forced by a breakdown on the computer to look back at previous mixes, and it was lovely because I think it was meant to happen.
Yeah.
And it triggered me on two other songs to say, oh, it's time to stop. It's, you know, you've finished the record. You need to start backing off. You're going too far. You know, it's so, I do that all the time. And it's something that I don't think you get when you're too young, though. Not usually.
You know what?
That's what producers are for. Right?
Absolutely. You know what? It seems like a very silly, basic concept, but when you're writing songs and producing songs, and especially when you're less experienced, save as is your friend much more exactly than save.
Save as, save variations. Absolutely.
You should save as many variations as are valid listenable versions of a project.
Yeah. You know what's very interesting, because I come from the old school, is that we were always working with cassettes and recording live, and it was all rough, and then we go, let's go and make the record now. But so, in a way, with the new technology now, you're already moving into the record before you get a chance to see if the chords are right, if it's too long, if it needs a middle eight or it doesn't. So I really recommend doing roughs and keeping something, even if it is a high technology and you're just jamming, use the first sessions to be the guttural jam, and then listen to that the next day and go, yeah, it's worth moving on with, you know. Yeah. Sometimes you hit it straight off, but most times you don't hit it straight off.
Brent, I'm sorry, I was just going to say, you know, Andrew Sheps has told the story numerous times about when he was recording U2 and Green Day at Abbey Road, and they would just start the recorders going and just burn through hours and hours and hours and hours of just kicking ideas around. It comes down to a matter of budget. If you have the money to do it on massive Pro Tools rigs at Abbey Road, that's a nice thing. But if you can just do it on a cassette deck, the creative process is no different.
Right. Yes.
The cost of the toys and the budget, you know, is going to be different depending who you are. But there's no reason the vibe has to be different.
Yeah.
Brandon, you ever, because I know your work, you tend to work on sound effects and sound textures. Mm-hmm. You ever put some of those massive swooshy hits together and just go?
Oh, all the time. This sucks. You know, a lot of times, just like everyone else is saying, you gotta, you know, step away from it sometimes. But a phenomenon that I've noticed is that to get yourself to change that perspective that allows you to see it from someone else's eyes, sometimes all you have to do is bring another person into that room. Mm-hmm. I don't know, even if they don't say a word, I don't know if it's you're just sensing their reaction to it. But you can, all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'm in their perspective now, and I don't like that. You know, right. Or, oh, yeah, that's working.
Just make sure they don't think they're a co-writer.
Dan,
we've all been down that road.
I was in the room with you.
I was in the room. I was asleep on the couch. I get half. From experience, I tell that story.
Dan, what about you? I know you're a pretty good songwriter there.
I'm dabbled in songwriting.
How do you edit yourself?
Well, just like he's saying, I look to people that I trust. You know, I have people that you're one of them. I send things to you. But I have a question about what you guys were talking about. How do you know how to balance between, because as an artist, you have to have a sound, right, that people are listening for. But you get bored. I get bored with things. I like a lot of different kinds of music. How do you balance being fresh with giving a consistent type product?
I'm an addict for listening to everybody's work. So, I'm listening, to Led Zeppelin one day, then listening to U2, then listening to the Beatles again, listening to reggae, listening to classical. I just can't. And so I'm a mass chameleon. I get influenced, and that triggers me to keep a balance. I still haven't. I'm very fortunate. I haven't lost the childish thrill of trying to emulate my heroes. That's where I get it from. I think
that's what makes you an artist, is how you then disseminate, how you interpret all of your influence.
I mean, you have something that works for you too, that, you know.
And I think what happens, the thing is, as you become, most artists listen to things that they enjoy and they're influenced by that. Then they do something that they're thinking, but those influences come through, and it's your interpretation of those influences that will define that project. And I also think that the other part is the difference that I found. You know, I came from music, went to sound design, and now I'm doing a lot more, trying to do a little bit more music. And what I learned was, you just got to do it. You got to wake up, you got to get in there, you got to do it, even if you got no ideas. And there's a certain amount of professionality that if you wait to get inspired to then think about doing it, sometimes you just never get anything done. Meanwhile, like when I do my sound design, I get in there, I sit down, blank canvas, not sure what I'm going to do, look for inspirations. I usually find, for me, everything before lunch doesn't happen because I'm distracted by everything and anything. The air conditioning, there's a creak, there's a this. I'm very, very distracted. Then I put some food in my body, and I'm nice and comfortable. And then I sit down, usually at about 2 o'clock.
And go to sleep.
And I go to sleep. No, I usually, from sheer terror, because I've wasted the day. You know, and you start focusing. But then what happens is I'll go to 10 o'clock at night. Because then you get in the zone and then you just flow with it. And once the flow's there, you can't shut it. Sometimes you have to shut it off.
Yeah, just that you said, as an artist, though, as well, is it because you're singing the songs or you're writing them, people around you start to make you aware of what they like about you.
Yeah,
you know, I sort of got an instinct of what I was after I'd released a couple of records, and then I started to find very slowly that's what I do.
Okay.
And that's what people resonate to, and they get it. I might be nervous about doing it, but they really got my lyrics, and they really got that I was doing something that I believed
in. But I have a question. You know, as an artist, you have to define yourself, because your listeners are expecting something.
Right.
But as a songwriter, that must be kind of fun, in the fact that you can say, look, I've done this, but now I want to do a Green Day tune, and I've never done that, where it's raw guitars and more. Do you try to think outside your box?
You know, that's the thrill to me, because, you know, the people I really love, you know, would have been, the Beatles were all over the place. You know, it's all their influences, whatever they did, you know, and artists like that I love. Because I grew up in the 60s and 70s buying vinyl records, I loved Slade, Gary Glitter, I loved Genesis, I loved Lindisfarne, I loved it all. I was a record buyer. So it's a delight now, and I've recently been working with Robbie Williams, and he's one of those kind of artists that he'll do anything that whatever triggers him on. He's an entertainer. And I used to worry about that, saying, oh, you know, I've got to be all this one thing to be an artist. Well, it can be just your voice, and it can be just your nature and what you want to sing about that makes you the artist. But being a songwriter is much more thrilling to me than being an artist, because the songs are magic, and wherever they come from is a wonderful bliss place to come from. When an artist says, I can only sing these songs, I'm this, and if I don't do that, I can't get through, well, then I feel very lucky to be a songwriter, because you have a free palette, really. Look at Stevie Wonder. I mean, come on, you know, it's right across the board. All these
from
different
country
influences.
To R&B,
yeah,
everything.
Yeah.
You were gonna say,
I was going to say... Also, and I often get to be the voice of bad news here on the podcast, and I'm going to give everybody a little bit of bad news, because now it's very easy for anybody to record anything at master quality. But the bad news is, it still comes down to talent. And there are plenty of people who shouldn't be artists. They have great recording equipment, but they have nothing to say or no cool way to say it. No. It still comes down to talent. And anybody who is really an artist, and you don't know really till you try, but anybody who really is an artist is going to bring something unique to whatever they do. And there are people who've created their own image, you know, or sonic image as an artist, and that's a talent right there, to create something that isn't there inherently in you. But whatever, either you have the talent to create something compelling for people, or you just have that built in and you don't even have to think about it, which most of the greatest artists are like. But not everybody's meant to be an artist. And if you get too wrapped up in, oh, you know, my people expect me to do this, or people expect to hear this from me, that's going to fail, because at that point you're not doing what you want to do. You can never write a hit song by setting out to write a hit song. You have to just do what comes from within. People react, and we talked about this even on the last podcast, people react much more to you having fun on stage than doing something great.
But I just, with that, I was on tour 1,000 years ago with a group caught up with people, and we've all dispersed into different parts of the planet.
Yes, we make fun of that regularly.
I know.
Actually.
But you know what's interesting, though, is, you know, I came to L.A. and I got in the business, you know, and I keep in touch, and everyone's got bands, and everyone's still doing it in their own little town. But what's interesting, and when we talk about talent or not talent, I think to be a professional in this business, it's more than talent. It's business. I mean, it is a business, and it's something that you're trying to provide. And you've seen how many people go, oh, they're really talented, but they sound like so-and-so. We already have so-and-so. We need somebody new. Or they don't look right. Or they don't... I mean, there's so much more to a business.
Yeah, but a new artist isn't setting out to be a business. A new artist is setting out to say or do something.
Right, but I think there's so many people on the local level that have a tremendous amount of talent who, for whatever reason, they're not going to ever make it. They don't have the stamina. They don't have the want enough to fight and compete and to go into a business environment. but they're really good and everybody likes them in their town. All of a sudden, I think what a great opportunity for so many small town people to learn it, to learn what we do.
Right.
And then you never know. Then there's the YouTube phenomenons where someone says, just so-and-so in a small little town, they do something, and all of a sudden they get a following. And then they can't handle it.
Well, and then, and then you get, then you really have to start being truthful and know how to self-edit yourself, because now your smallest little demo can go up on YouTube, and if you release something that's not ready, you get labeled just like that.
Don't you think the biggest problem with music in the history of music is not the one song? It's okay, now that you've made it, how do you stay there?
No, that's
because there's so many one-hit wonders.
That's the freshman. But you know what? We'll pick that up on another conversation, because we could really go off course on that one. But
there are a lot worse things than being a one-hit wonder. Yeah. You could be a no-hit wonder. That's a lot worse.
Or a half.
People aspire. Worse, yeah. Well, hey, listen, we're going to have to wrap things up.
No, I don't think so. Not if the last one was an hour 45.
I think we should do a 24-hour podcast. Stay with us. Be with us. Live with us.
But you know what, though? I will say, in answering the question, how do you know when your song sucks? I think you hit a really good point when you said...
The dog walks out of the room?
No, when you said... you got to make sure the song is correct, stay away from technology, make sure the song works with the phrasing, with the lyrics, with just the melody before you even record.
Stay with it a little bit. Give it a bit of time.
A little bit of time.
Don't rush towards the next hurdle before you've really analyzed it.
So are you a half empty guy? Because you said, how do you know when it sucks? And I always think, how do you know when it's good? Because I'm a half full guy. You're a half-empty guy.
You know what? One thing to keep in mind with what Martin says, too, is no one cares how long it took you to do the song.
Right.
They don't care if it took a day or a year.
That's right. Well, very, very good point.
And here's the thing. I think reason why I'm phrasing it like that is because you see a lot of people who think all their stuff is really good, and it's really not,
Yeah. Oh, most songs suck. That's just true. There's a zillion songs out there. Most of them suck.
Only Rob could say that. And how Rob sounds on the mic? It's like fucking God, isn't it? He's got this tone. He's right. We're all about dying.
There's a lot of music that sucks that sells really well.
No, that's true.
Yeah, don't do that.
By the way, Rush is second to
do the kind that's really good that
Rush
sells.
Rush is past Pink Floyd.
But you can't get us off the mic.
I know. Guys, that was a subtle hint.
Yeah, okay.
We're wrapping up.
Maybe you are.
No, but anyhow. Well, thanks, Martin. This is the second podcast. That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it, Mark. I learned a lot about the cloud as well.
Diane, and thank you for joining us. And that was pretty awesome. So when you get back to Boise, what are you doing? Where are you playing? Where's the night playing
we
next?
We have a gig on Saturday. So,
gotta
hurry back.
So, in Audio Nowcast terms, that's two Saturdays ago.
How was the show?
We take time to see if it's right.
Exactly.
We let it brew.
We don't just put out a podcast immediately.
We analyze it tomorrow.
Do you have your iPad 3 yet, Mike?
But good luck, and we look forward to tracking you
and
success and with Beloved, your band, too. So that should be pretty cool. Rob, you working on anything fun and exciting that you can talk about?
Working on demolishing my house and rebuilding giant parts of it because of a flood. That's a story for another time. But it's a little interesting trying to I'm trying to work there as well at times, and it's just a little bit of juggling going on. But yeah, actually, we're doing some more Google related stuff, which is always fun. We are doing a commercial campaign that I can't talk about right now, but that's a pretty exciting thing.
Right.
And for the most part, focusing on how to work in a building full of jackhammers at the moment. Literally, by the way.
I should record that.
You got plenty of chances. Come on over.
Hez, dude, just shut up, okay?
Sorry about that.
He's waiting for the video version.
Yeah. I'm just sitting over here looking good, I guess.
Hez, what are you up to? Besides Jaguar Cell on...
A lot of it sold on eBay.
Great.
But it was funny. I got a lot of emails from people as I was trying to sell the other gear that said, hey, man, this is never going to sell because it's too expensive. So better luck someplace else. Literally, I got a number of emails like that.
What did you sell?
I sold a Dave Smith mono Evolver.
Yeah.
And I sold an MPC 1000, a couple other things as well. But I have an idea, and that is, okay, I'm not going to sell it on eBay anymore. I'm going to sell it privately. So.
But you never answered my emails, though.
I didn't, no.
The ones that I said, hey, man, this is never going to sell.
Yeah. Yeah, but I went and I blocked you from ever getting anything again. So. But, yeah, no, the gear is selling, and that's going pretty well. I'm working on a couple of things at home. I'm now a full-time musician and engineer, as I was saying as of 2 hours ago before the podcast started. So, yeah, that's it.
Great. Brandon.
Working on a few projects at work, nothing I can talk about right now, but the big thing is preparing for my son to arrive in 3 weeks.
So, sleep now while yes. you can.
But also, I am going to take a month off of work, so I'm transferring
nice.
Projects I want to work on at home to Dropbox on the cloud, and then going to have that at home to work on.
Great. So, yeah. Scott, how about you?
I like to lay on the grass, look up in the sky, and watch the clouds. I am still going through Plugin Fest. So any of our listeners out there, if you've got a favorite VST or RTAS or TDM plugin, let me know. The more bizarre, the better. Yes, I'm in my giant plugin mode. I'm searching everywhere for things that are odd, unique, and I'm just experimenting my ass off.
That sounds nice. Like a lot of fun. That sounds yeah. great.
Yeah. Dverb. Yeah. It all comes down to Dverb.
Dverb. Martin!
Well, I was only here, Mike, a week ago. So things haven't rapidly changed in that short time. I know it was sad because this podcast won't come out for what, another 6 months or something. So I'll have to make something up. No, as you know, I'm preparing to put the record out at the end of the year at Christmas, hopefully. And I'm just very excited about that. I haven't been able to stop writing, even though I should be stopping writing. I've found that I've just been in a very prolific run. And I've the moment I thought I'd finished one record, other songs started to appear. So I'm in a very creative, fun vibe at the moment. And you're helping me to rebuild the studio now. So
in the cloud.
Yeah, in the cloud. And I'm looking forward to that smoky cloud. So, no, everything is good. And thank you for having me on the podcast 2 times in a row.
Great. Yeah. Mm. Well, we'll do it again in a couple weeks.
Well, it's the payment that that I love.
And Martin's already calling in sick for the next one now.
Well, my back's gone out.
My back's gonna go out. It's gonna go out.
How about you, Mike? What are you up to? You touring with Jazzy D?
Jay-Z David Z. I'm working with Jay-Z.
Are you? That's what he's on your brain. Now, what are you up? No, let's do this. What are you up to, Mike?
Not a whole lot.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Edit.
No, just working on some commercials and doing some more Toshiba commercials that they've come out, and there's one more coming out in the series, and doing a video game, which I can't talk about right now. So.
That's what I find fascinating about the podcast, is that I've only been here twice recently, but every time you ask somebody what they're doing, say, I can't talk about it right now.
Well, that's what we do.
Like they've you killed somebody or something. Like, I can't talk about what I've just done. I'm going down for it.
Unfortunately, I think everybody here is under NDAs that you really can't talk about it. Uh-huh. We can talk about the fact that we can't talk about it.
I gotcha.
Actually, I've seen some NDAs where you can't even say that you're not allowed to talk about it.
So
that's bad.
We can't even talk about what we can't even talk about.
This is very, very, very weird.
It's weird. I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? What are you up to? I can't talk about it. Keep enjoying yourself.
Yeah. All I'm just saying, you know what? As soon as I talk about something, like,
We'll all know.
14 kittens get killed right there. Oh, so I can't.
No, you have to keep that to yourself. I love animals.
All right. Well, hey, listen. I just wanted to say a couple things. Number one, I just wanted to plug the Arms of the Sun CD. It's a great CD. It's independent. And I've been talking with the guys from the band, and we're going to be doing a giveaway. We're going to give away a shirt and some CDs. But you should really pick it up if you want to go to armsofthesun.com. It's an independent rock and roll album that is really, really good. And Martin, you've heard some of it. It's pretty good.
It's all right.
That was awesome.
Edit. I couldn't resist.
That was well
That's
played.
One of the best things I've ever amazing. And your engineering on it and the photographs you took and the video you did, terrific. Great stuff.
We've missed you, Martin.
Yeah, well,
and we will miss you.
We will miss you.
Oh, I'm definitely not going to be here, am I?
You're more than welcome.
Hey, are you going to let me post some more video on your
No,
band
I'm sorry,
page?
Man. No, they're a great band. No, I love the band. What you played, and it sounded really good, really good. And if you like the Beatles, you're going to like that record.
Well, there you go. Wow, mm-hmm. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Are you going to let me post some more video on your on your fan page?
No, no. None of those other videos.
As
no.
long as you know the payments keep coming, then we'll be in.
I don't need you charge too much.
All right, well, hey, I just want to tell everybody, if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. One more time, Jay-Z, David Z. Jay-Z, David Z. All right, well, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.